one of my favorite actors. Not only an actor, but a writer, a producer, a director, is Ben Stiller. And you all know Ben from, in fact, I remember when you were in There's Something About Mary. And remember that?
Barely.
I remember because I saw it with my kids, and I was mortified. And I was laughing so hard I was crying. And you know him from The Fockers, Meet the Parents, a zillion wonderful films.
Thank you.
Ben has done something rather extraordinary. He's got a 7-part series, which is based on a real story, Escape at Dannemora. And you know, you remember that? The two inmates who dug their way out of a maximum security prison in upstate New York?
Yes.
And one of the prison officials, actually, she was not working.
She was a civilian worker. She worked in the tailor shop, yeah.
And I was telling you, that was my dream job. 40 pounds to play that character.
Oh, you would have liked that to, to gain the
weight? Would you love gaining 40 pounds? You had to?
Yeah, and then you have to go in the back room with Benicio del Toro.
No good.
Okay.
No good. Those sex scenes were the most joyless. It was like, what?
Joyless, yes. Well, you know, it's a true story, and it was going on at this prison in upstate New York, that this woman was having relations with two different inmates, and they took advantage of her, and then she ended up helping them attempt to escape, and they got out, into the Adirondacks for about 3.5 weeks.
And things that we never know. There's a reality to this series, which it's on Showtime, and you can see it.
Yes, we're 2 weeks in. Our Sunday night's our third episode.
But it more than any prison thing I've ever seen, it captures the futility, the bleakness. I don't know how you did that.
Yeah, well, we had access to the real prison, to Clinton Correctional.
I don't know how they gave you access.
Well, the governor would. We had a meeting with the governor, and he gave us access, and we weren't going to be able to have that, which made all the difference. And when you get up there, this town is dominated by the prison. It's a huge prison. There's 3,000 people in there, and the town is very, very small. It's about 30 miles from the Canadian border, and everybody in this town works at the prison. You know, it's a prison economy up in that part of the state. And so, you know, for me, what I got was that the bleakness of the place, how tough it was to survive up there as someone who lives or works at the prison, let alone being an inmate. For everybody, they're sort of, you know, in a prison, sort of, you know, a type of prison, really.
Right. And Tilly, the woman who helped them escape, her husband also worked at the prison.
That's right.
Everyone did.
Yeah, Lyle worked there, and most of them had a couple of jobs working in different prisons also. And, you know, it's just, I never was aware that this system worked where there is a tailor shop where it's a private company, even though it's a state prison.
Right, they make money.
Yeah, they make money. They're making uniforms for other prisons. It's called Corecraft. And the prisoners are paid maybe 35 to 50 or 60 cents an hour. So it's a very, you know, it's kind of, you know, the conditions are tough, but they're also, you know, these are murderers and you know, violent offenders. And it's one civilian who's overseeing 40 or 50 inmates with one corrections officer. So that's the dynamic in the room.
Right. And there's a lot of power in that room. And here's the thing. When you watch this, every now and then I'd have to say to myself, they're murderers. Stop feeling sorry for them. You know, because one of them was so charming and he painted. He was so cute. But a murderer.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that these guys were violent offenders, and when you see a prison story, you know, you naturally are going to sort of, you know, want to see them escape. I think that's what we all are interested in, for me at least, when I watch a prison story, you know, the protagonist.
Yeah, can they do it?
Yeah, can they do it? And the fact that they have this history of who they are is something that I think is a very important part of the story, but this system that was working at Clinton before the inspector general came in to do this report after the escape, and they've changed the systems there now. But they had a place called the Honor Block, which was where these guys were living, the cell block where you could go if you were on good behavior, and you could basically watch cable TV. You could put sheets in front of your cell so you had privacy. You could cook on the main floor. So they could really, this was all just based on good behavior, not what you did outside of prison. So it's an interesting thing that, you know. It's a whole world that develops when you're in the prison, and then those relationships that develop with the corrections officers.
That was extraordinary. Yeah. I never really saw that to that extent before.
Well, they're spending a lot of time together over the years, so these relationships develop.
So here you have this, which really leaves an impact on those of us who view it. Does this mean it's a whole new direction for Ben Stiller? No more funny? Although there were funnies in here.
I hope that there's some, you know, look, I think the best dramas have humor within them. They always do, because life has that. I love directing. This is the first thing I've directed that I haven't actually acted in. And I really enjoyed not having to deal with myself as an actor. Right. Not having to edit myself and just working with these great actors, working with Paul Dano and Patricia Arquette and Benicio Del Toro, just amazing actors.
They were great.
So as a director, it was just wonderful to have, you know, such great actors to work with. So I hope so. I hope we can do different things. But I also love comedy and hope I can still do that also.
Of course you're going to do that.
I guess. Oh, yeah.
You're the only one who could make funny out of the prison thing.
Well, I didn't want to make fun of it. I wanted to treat it in a real way.
No, you did.
But there's the irony, because these are real people who are dealing with this, but that there are ironies that were happening there that were just so, I mean, amazing. The details of the story, and the more that we learned about what actually happened from the Inspector General's report and reading the transcripts, the more amazing it was to me. And surreal, really, some of the things that were going on.
No, and the reality of it. You, from the time you were a kid, you were sort of touched. You knew, even your parents were actors, and I remember when I came into New York City, hearing your parents do Blue Nun.
Yes.
Omar, does anyone remember those commercials?
The Blue Nun white wine commercials, yeah.
Made you really want to drink.
Yeah, they used to write those commercials.
They were great.
And perform them. And I remember as a kid, my sister and I being around my parents when they were working on writing them, and they work at home. And it's kind of a lost art, the radio commercial, I think.
Yeah, because they were live and they were fantastic.
Yeah.
But you started acting as a kid too and working really young.
I tried. I attempted to.
But you were okay.
I wasn't very good. I was definitely wanting to do it. I also wanted to be a director, but I also, when there was a chance to do something as an actor, I would go in and audition and usually not get the part, but I tried. I was on the Guiding Light for a few episodes, playing Freddie Bauer, who then went away to. I was there for like 2 Christmases for 2 weeks, and then the next year I came back and I was about 1.5 feet taller, and it wasn't me.
So, what was, when you think about it, milestones or life changing? Was it Mary?
Oh, in terms of just...
In terms of you becoming Ben Stiller.
I think, you know, in terms of just being an actor in movies, I think There's Something About Mary was the first movie that I was in as an actor that actually did well. And then that opened up a lot of doors for doing comedies as an actor. Yeah, and I think that definitely changed the direction that I was going in. But, you know, up to that point, I directed a couple of movies two movies at that point. So I was doing both, and then that sort of like sent me in the direction of doing comedies more.
And then, of course, this film. And I'm just curious, we all knew this story. What made you decide that you had to really go deeper?
You know, I think it was learning more about it. I was sent a script by the two writers, Brett Johnson and Michael Tolkien.
You knew and were...
Yeah, I didn't know them, actually. I knew Michael Tolkien wrote the movie The Player, and Brett was a TV writer, written on Mad Men and Ray Donovan, and it was pretty amazing. I'd been out of the country working on Zoolander 2 when this happened, so I wasn't that aware of it. And as I read it, I was fascinated by the story, and the more I learned about it, the more real facts that I discovered, that's what made me want to do it. And because, like I said, I couldn't believe what was actually going on. And then we went up to the prison, and I visited it in June of 2016, and went to the manhole where these guys escaped, because they came out of a manhole about 450 feet south of the prison that they burrowed their way to.
They had freedom for a couple of...
They did, for about 3.5 weeks. Yeah. So when I went to that manhole, I was amazed at just the geographical setting of this prison in the middle of the Adirondacks, in the middle of nowhere, and how these guys actually, you know, what the power of will that took them to be able to get out and how that happened, and the relationships that developed, the human relationships between Tilly and Sweat and Matt, and how... You know, these interactions were what made it possible, and how that could happen in this day and age. How does a prison escape like this, which seems like it's from, like, you know, it would have been like 50 or 60 years ago, actually happen?
Right.
So that's what made me want to tell the story.
And how they all wanted to get out, including Tilly. You know, she had a job.
She was going to go to and escape to Mexico with them, and they were going to possibly kill her husband.
Right, which she approved of.
She approved of it until it came time to actually do it. Not that I want to give away too much, but you can look it all up on Wikipedia, I guess. But it's to me, what was fascinating was that she really went to the brink with them, and then what happened and how that affected her and how it affected them, because they did have this relationship with her. You know, and what are the real feelings? Even though they were using her, like, people are having intimate relations, there have to be real feelings
but
that exist
intimate
anyway.
Intimate relations... I don't know if you guys have seen this yet. You've got to, in this horrible, dismal, the back of the tailor shop. I mean, speaking of
romance.
Yeah,
there's a back room. Yes, yes. I just want to talk about intimate relations with you, Joan. I just like talking about it. Let's go. This room actually existed. I went to the real tailor shop. I went to the real back room there. And there were no video cameras. You could
Nothing.
Just go there, close the door. It's just that the fact that that even existed was amazing to me. Mm. And the fact that one woman could be in a room with 40 criminals, and you know that was just the accepted dynamic, where these guys had 13-inch cutting shears and, you know, access to tools like that.
And she liked it.
Well, I think she did. I think she did like it, because for her, she had this power over these men. And you know, she was being used, definitely,
right.
But, you know, I think it also says something about, you know, just the sex roles in our society,
right.
And how and gender dynamics and all that.
And who's the victim? I mean,
right.
I had to ask myself that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like, is she a victim? Should we feel sorry for her? She wanted to kill her husband.
Right.
And she was sort of enjoying.
Well, I think it's a complicated question. That's what's interesting about the character. I think Patricia gives her so much humanity.
Patricia Arquette does a great job.
She really does, because she is a kind of a puzzle. You don't quite know, is she good or is she bad? I know that she was, I think she was being manipulative,
yeah.
And also being manipulated.
Exactly.
And, you know, what her actual agenda was, and what, you know, what it was that was guiding her. I think it was somehow she wanted a different life, which, by the way, I can understand. You know, living in that situation,
well,
why wouldn't you want to have
so
that?
So bleak and gray,
yeah.
And everything else.
So,
it's on Showtime. You can see it, Escape at Dannemora, and it really makes you think. You know, you don't have to watch it all at once. You know, take it, because every episode has something else. And you actually talked to the surviving prisoner.
Yeah, we met with David Sweat, who was the one who survived.
The engineer guy.
Yeah, he was the one who did all the cutting, and he spent all the time down in the tunnels. And he's in solitary confinement now, and, you know, probably will be for the rest of his life.
God.
Some form of confinement like that. And, you know, it's fascinating what he was able to achieve. When you think about a guy like that who had a violent past, but you know his actual skills would have maybe in a different life he could have been in the military, he could have been an engineer of some type.
He was talented.
Yeah, but also had a lot of issues too.
Right.
You know,
well,
and
what's
you know
a
he
little
he,
murder?
He killed a policeman. In prison he was known as a cop killer, so that he was always in. Mm. Fear that he was going to
be killed
or beaten up by corrections officers, and that was one of his motivations for wanting to get out. And I think Paul Dano did a great job of really embodying that sort of this guy who inside was having to pretend to be something else
exactly.
in prison to survive
and conflicted.
Yeah.
So now that this is up and away, what are you working on?
I've just been finishing this, because it's 7 episodes,
right.
So we've just been finishing the last episodes with the sound and the music. And I'm going to take a break and, you know, hang out with my kids and
not work for a while. That's unusual for you. You are a person, but you're a worker person.
Yes. Well, yeah, no, which I'm looking forward to.
I love that you came here. Thank you, Ben.
It's great to see you.
You too.
Great to see you. I love that you do this.
What?
I love that you do this show with people here in a restaurant and it's on radio. And
I know.
Like, this is just a great tradition.
Radio is, you really do reach out and touch someone. Like, all these people are like my family.
Yeah. What are we doing next? What are we all doing after this?
Oh, we can come up with a lot of things if you visit all the time. Ben Stiller, the show is on Showtime. 7 episodes. Come on and start it. We've got a lot more coming. So I need you all to stay tuned. And thanks again to our friends at Carnegie Hall, because you've made all this possible. Your generous support makes holidays really special. CarnegieHall.org.